Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un McChicken es solo $1.50. Resulta que ser el héroe de tu primita solo te cuesta $1.50. Por un McChicken, good deal. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome into the early line. We are live right here on Sports Grid on a Thursday morning. I'm Kevin Walsh. I'm joined, of course, by Donnie Wrightside with a lot to get to. Our first taste of the Major League Baseball trade deadline. DRS, how are you feeling?
It's Thursday, ready to go. Did you know right now, good people watching and listening? How about this? Next Thursday night, there's going to be an NFL football game on preseason, but it's football closer and closer as we inch towards September here.
And baseball will have to just carry the load until then, and I definitely think we'll have enough excitement on the build-up to this trade deadline. The Mets beat the Yankees for the second consecutive game, taking the first half of the Subway Series, protecting their home field. And it seems like the Yankees had enough of the spotlight and good talk about you. Let's get it back towards us. They make the trade for Andrew Benintendi, the Kansas City Royals All-Star, who is an impending free agent. A couple of minor leaguers making their way back to Kansas City as the Yankees look to get stronger even before the deadline.
Everybody's favorite farm system, the Kansas City Royals, once again providing a lot of fruits and vegetables, Kevin, for other teams in Major League Baseball. That's a good move there for the Yankees, because is it one that's going to put you over the top? Probably not, but it just gives you more options in the outfield. Solid move by the Yanks, particularly after two straight losses there to the Mets.
We'll talk a little bit about kind of how Benintendi impacts this team, but also how it impacts the Yankees' moves moving forward, obviously linked to Juan Soto. How, if at all, does this change things? We've also got an update that more an unfortunate side, it feels like, or maybe a more confusing one, I should say, with Los Angeles Angels star Mike Trout. The initial story is that he has a back injury that is likely to linger the remainder of his career. Wondering, is this guy ever going to be the same again? Mike Trout commented on it saying, I get back to my phone, people are telling me my career is over. Completely blown out of proportion and not the case.
I think some things are blown out of proportion in this, but whenever you hear an athlete and a back injury, it's never a good scenario. It's like, oh, good, it's only a back injury, Kevin, as opposed to something else. You're talking about a guy with an elite swing out there that swings with a lot of torque, as in he is a power hitter. This is not a good look for Mike Trout. I hope for the best for Mike Trout, but will we see him again in 2022?
Which obviously, if you went on an under 35.5, I believe the number was, home runs at the All-Star break on Trout, an injury there can help you a lot. The other thing that we're wondering is, if Trout is done for the season, could this push the Angels to trade Shohei Ohtani? We'll get into that a little bit there. Speaking of trades, Patrick Corbin, the hottest starting pitcher on the market, goes to show why. My goodness. Two-thirds of an inning, 6 earned runs, 7 hits against the Dodgers. I get it, it's the Dodgers. I don't care. Boy, Patrick Corbin stinks.
Yeah, he doesn't want to. Actually, yesterday, I think that was a business move by him. Like, I don't want to get traded anywhere. I certainly don't want to be a Dodger. Watch this, Dodgers. Send this to your scouting staff, a nice two-thirds of an inning as they get pounded. And if you're looking for a sweep from the national standpoint, that ended quickly in the bottom. Excuse me, yeah, the bottom of the first inning yesterday for the Dodgers.
Yeah, I still have to wonder, right? Is that like the Nats in the room, like perfect scenario? They're like, see, we now get to continue to threaten people with Patrick Corbin. And if they're not going to take him, they're going to have to give us a world of prospects. Almost a sweep for the Nats. They win a series against the Dodgers. We did have a sweep, though. Never able to cash that Astros-Dodgers parlay. Our radio audience is here on this Thursday morning. Kevin Walsh, Donnie Wrightside of the early line on SiriusXM. Channel 159. Donnie, the Athletics did it. They're hot. They just swept the Houston Astros, who had won 5 in a row with 2 versus the Yankees and 3 against the Seattle Mariners.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive yesterday. And also, yes, a third day of that parlay. I said yesterday, I didn't think that one of those two teams were going to sweep out, which means, you know, the reverse sweep. If Washington and also the Athletics would have won, that would have been incredible stuff. But that is Major League Baseball there. Who would have thought that the Astros, the hottest team, one of the hottest teams in baseball coming into Oakland, got swept out of there by the A's? Come on now.
Very surprising stuff. The Athletics, again, oddly hot, winning 7 of their last 10, though far from making any noise anywhere across any of the races. On the NFL side of things, Geno Smith taking all of the first-team reps, and the talk out of Seattle seems to be that this is almost the expectation, not how it was Geno's turn and Drew Lock gets after it tomorrow. The early indication is this is Geno's job to lose.
Yeah, I want to see how loud the 12s are in the in attendance this year for home games for the Seattle Seahawks. They had it good for about the last decade or so when you're lining up with Russell Wilson under center and having a very good defense. It's going to be a lot up in the air there. Let's see if they have that same energy this year on 3rd and 1 to see if their defense can rise to the challenge or, quite frankly, the offense can even get a first down here this year.
I still truly have no idea what their plan in Seattle is. A win total right now at 5.5. Minus 130 towards that over. Speaking of having no idea what your plan is, man, I read this headline 100 times before I believed it. Matt Patricia's calling plays in New England. What are we doing in New England?
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? It's Bill Belichick outsmarting himself and sort of self-destructing by saying, yeah, I lost Tom Brady, but I'm still the smartest man in the room. You know what makes sense? Let's not go out and get a proven offensive coordinator. Let's make a defensive coordinator our offensive coordinator. If you remember Andy Reid and the Philadelphia Eagles, hey, Juan Castillo, offensive line coach, let's make him D coordinator. Andy Reid was fired shortly after that.
Again, for those, like Matt Patricia, all those years as the DC in New England, goes to Detroit, it's a nightmare. And I was the offensive play call. And people are like, his defensive prowess will help. Where are we? Also, Draymond is seeking a major bag from the Warriors, which is very interesting. We'll be right back.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on Sports Grid, we can look towards some of the top headlines in Major League Baseball. We knew Yankees-Mets was going to be noteworthy for some, me. I think it's a World Series preview, but I think we have to actually start what happened a little bit after the game, which is the Yankees trading for Andrew Benintendi. It feels like the most notable move we've certainly seen in the build-up to the trade deadline, an all-star in Benintendi, the 5th best batting average in all of Major League Baseball. The Yankees looking to be aggressive here at the deadline, Donnie. They set the tempo early by bringing in Benintendi.
Yeah, one of those look-see guys that you can bring in and certainly have some success with. Will they sign him in the offseason? We don't know, but if you're going to ask me, I'm going to get a 300 hitter, which is like a unicorn now in Major League Baseball, where most guys hit between, what, 220 and 260. It's like, ooh, that guy's really performing well. You have some swing and misses there, like Gallo batting, what, like 160, 170 in that range. It just gives you other options. And how many times have you heard me on this show, Kevin, handicap the New York Yankees and say to myself, boy, they're really good 2 through 4, but outside of that, they really stink. It's nice to get another bat in there. We could say, well, you know what? Outside of if Stanton comes back, and obviously if Judge continues to hit the way he is, to have a guy in that order, which maybe you can bat him first or maybe 5th or 6th, to say, you know what? You can't just pitch around my guys here because I got a 300-plus batter behind them looking to do some damage and make you pay. Having good bats in the lineup is never a bad thing here. Good move by the New York Yankees.
And I think you mentioned the Stanton thing. I think that possibly pushed the Yankees to make this move sooner than later. We'll get to the Juan Soto aspect in just a second there, but Benintendi, and by the way, the Yankees' upcoming games are actually against the Kansas City Royals today. If the physicals are passed, Benintendi very well could be in the lineup today. The Yankees need that help right now because Joey Gallo is less than zero in terms of what he brings to the table. He is, at this point, not a major league level player. So he's irrelevant to the conversation. So the Yankees are going to need outfield help there in the absence of Giancarlo Stanton. And the fact that they're able to do that with a guy that, again, made an all-star team is incredible. Is this the, you know, blockbuster deal of the Yanks offseason? I don't believe so. The initial reports indicate it's not either. And it probably shouldn't be. Because, yes, you see a 320 hitter, and I feel like at most times you go, oh, this guy's going to rocket to the top of a lineup. Is he going to bat leadoff? But the Yankees love LeMahieu, and he's not going to bat second. That's where Judge hits. So this is probably, as you mentioned, maybe your sixth hitter in that lineup. I don't think the sixth hitter is ever going to be the move that changes your season. But I like the fact that they went and got it right away. Because if you miss out on Soto, you still would have had need in the outfield, and you were able to check that box right now. The question, though, that does, you know, kind of hang over this, Don, is how, if at all, does this impact the Yankees in their pursuit of Juan Soto?
I don't think it impacts it at all. I just think it's a shrewd move here because, as you said, we don't know when Giancarlo Stanton's coming back. And from the latest, when you usually go on the IL, okay, maybe it's something minor, you'll be back in a week. But it looks like this is more of that 2 to 3 week injury, which when you say, all right, and we need somebody to cover in the meantime, we don't want to burn one of our prospects coming up who might not be ready to play. And also, if you take a look at Andrew Benintendi, oh, he's coming from Kansas City. There's no pressure. Now he's going to have the bright lights of New York. That could be one thing, but he's a veteran guy. He's played in big markets before. So it's not as if he gets to Yankee Stadium for the first time and has a camera out with his phone going, oh man, can you believe it? I finally made it to the big stage. No, he's been there and played at that level. I just like the move. And also, Kevin, if you can equate it maybe to last year's trade deadline, when you took a look at the Atlanta Braves, sometimes these are look-sees here. They get Joc Pederson about a week and a half before the deadline and say, all right, if we win a few games with Joc, we'll keep him. But if not, we can always flip this back over because, you know, contrary to popular belief, the Atlanta Braves were not World Series favorites around the trade deadline. If you stack up guys about a week ahead of time, you can build that momentum. And what happens if Benintendi comes on here, Kevin, and we see him play well throughout this weekend? All right, maybe we don't have to make that big move and he accumulates well. Or maybe if Benintendi comes over and, I don't know, is 0 for 17, then you say, hey, you know what? This might have been not the right move for us. It was cheap. Let's go ahead and make the big move now to secure our outfield.
And I think the Stanton injury provides you that flexibility. But also, when you take a look at things, right, you should not let Andrew Benintendi, who is going to be a complete clean free agent at the end of this season, stop you from bringing in a Juan Soto. I think it's almost Juan Soto insurance. I think the moves makes a lot of sense. Again, whenever you can bring, as you mentioned, a 320 hitter into the fold, it's a good move. And we know the Yankees are legitimately in this Soto race, from the Yankees beat reporters to Jeff Passan of ESPN. Everybody knows that the Yankees are legitimately in on Soto. They're in on Luis Castillo as well, so it goes to show that they're in the mix. I'll also just mention this note quickly here. Benintendi's getting the vaccine. Goes to the Yankees, that's a legitimate story because they've got three more games in Toronto and you never know, they could potentially see the Blue Jays in the playoffs. He is getting the vaccine. Is that a Yankees mandate? Was he going to do it because he was going to be traded? I think it's probably the latter. I guess it shows that they don't really care about anything in Kansas City right now, which is par for the course. What about now, Donnie, are there any other takeaways from you on the trade aspect of this? Or to you then, does the story go back to the fact that the Mets are able to take a pair of games straight off of the Yankees?
No, let's keep it on Andrew Benintendi here because I do think this move might be a precursor as well. We tend to forget how some things are like linked together. And in the NBA, how many times do you hear this? A three-team player deal, right? Where you're saying, all right, we need the Sixers, the Celtics, and the Lakers to participate to make this happen. Andrew Benintendi comes over. He's a free agent at the end of the year. What positions does Andrew Benintendi play? He's in the outfield. You know what position Juan Soto plays? He's in the outfield. So what happens if the Yankees make a move and go, hey, you know what? We'll give you 3-4 of our best prospects here, but also, how about an all-star Andrew Benintendi, which you don't have any restrictions through next year, and you do have to replace Juan Soto in that lineup, who is an outfielder. Maybe that's an extra piece to the puzzle that they're ramping up as opposed to using a third team, saying, hey, this might be a little bit more enticing. You'll get a ready-made all-star caliber player that you don't have $30 million a year to pay over the next 3 years. You can let him go if you want. You can sign him if you want, but he plugs a need in your outfield with a legitimate playing source. I think this might hold up for the Yankees if they wanted to flip Benintendi again before the deadline.
Can you still flip it? I know in the NBA you couldn't flip a guy that quickly. They don't actually go out there and play Benintendi.
Up there last year, Kevin, with Joc Pederson. Joc Pederson came over two weeks or so before the deadline where they said, the Braves saying, hey, if we can get on a little bit of a streak, we'll keep him. But if not, he holds value across Major League Baseball. We'll flip him to a contender and just get our money back, per se.
Gotcha. I thought we might be a little too close. I think the plan is to keep Benintendi there. The Nationals would be odd to me if they started banging the drum saying we need Andrew Benintendi all of the sudden there, considering he's an impending free agent and almost would assuredly leave Washington. But who knows what Washington's best plans are. On the fact that the Mets were able to win a pair of games, again, it's just they are a legit contender. Like, I don't know how Mets fans will flip this into doom and gloom, give them a chance. I don't know. Like, the Braves just lost a series, and the Mets took two games off the Yankees. And you did it with Max Scherzer being absolutely phenomenal. Seven innings of work, only allowed five hits. Wasn't his best strikeout stuff. He had six strikeouts. Three of them were against Aaron Judge, but didn't allow a run. And this game got tied off of Gleyber Torres' two-run shot in the top of the eighth inning, and the Mets walked it off with Starling Marte. This is one of baseball's best teams. I do accurately think right now, tier one is still Yankees, Dodgers, Astros, but the Mets are not far off. And I would be open to a conversation that the Mets belong in a tier one, or maybe, you know, that tier 1B, if you will, with the Mets and the Atlanta Braves. And at some point, DeGrom comes back. I know the start in Syracuse didn't go how you would want. He actually gave up a couple of home runs in that rehab start there. But this is a Mets team. Again, every step of the way, they continue to show that they are a real World Series contender. This, though, may be the most important thing they've done here up against the Yankees, winning in different ways with different guys, really, really contributing at a high level.
Yeah, the Mets known they were going to be bidders for a championship when they just said, all right, we'll cut a check for Robbie Cano just to leave. And also, let's take a look at the trade deadline. Even though they won those two games, Cohen's not going to sit back and be like, hey, we're good enough to win it. We just beat the Yankees. Did you watch that? It looks like they're the leaders in the clubhouse for Robertson and also Wilson Contreras of the Cubs. They're going to make moves at the deadline. They're where they need to be. Let's see what they do after next Tuesday, because this could be one of the favorites, Kevin, heading into the playoffs now.
The Mets have, again, kind of continued to flash all of the right things. I thought this game might have perfectly captured it, though, with the great Scherzer start. You got the Pete Alonso home run, late clutch baseball situation, being able to check those boxes. You feel like Buck Showalter always finds his way to grab some credit for that, and it's understandable. They just feel like a different baseball team. A lot more to get on to on the diamond. It's all next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on Sports Grid with a look towards the rest of these headlines in Major League Baseball, and the Mike Trout one certainly deserves our attention. A back injury that the reports suggest are going to be impacting him for the remainder of his career. Now, Trout looked to kind of slow down a lot of the buzz, saying this is being blown out of proportion. My career is not over. I'm totally fine. I think it likely lands in the middle. Although no one was really saying Trout's career is over, it does look like he is going to be dealing with this back issue for the remainder of that career. It's going to be something that can linger over Mike Trout from here on out, which is a shame. One of the very best players the sport has seen over the last two decades, plus at minimum. Donnie, what was your reaction when you heard the Mike Trout news?
Yeah, it's kind of a shame because we thought it was just like, all right, like, took a swing a little bit too hard here, rib or cartilage injury, put him on the IL for about, you know, 2 weeks. He'll be back and ready to go. Has some eerie, you know, concerns about his future, but even looking at last year, we expected him to come back from that calf injury. He never came back from that calf injury, and rightfully so. If your team's going to be out of it, why risk one of the best players in baseball down the stretch just so he can get a couple swings in and maybe damage himself further heading into the offseason? But back injury, which, you know, we're reading it from like Twitter doctors, and you know, people are trying to that aren't actually in the room with Mike Trout getting the exact diagnosis. Oh, here's what it looks like he has. Here's how they can treat it here. But if this is something that Mike Trout has to do and sort of, I guess, when his off seasons and off days and, you know, even during the regular season of baseball, sort of do exercises and treatments to keep ahead of it, that's never a good thing. Like, you don't have to do preventative work on your shoulders or your back if it doesn't hurt you. But now the fact you're saying, what's going to take place in the future? Am I worried about Kevin now? Like, oh boy, I got one real good at swing per at bat now where I can't go, okay, I got three swings at this. Let me take three hard cuts. I have to conserve my energy. Or how about that ball that's hitting the gap? Because Mike Trout is an elite center fielder. Do I lay out for this one? Hey, look, I can steal this home run, but if I jump and crash into this fence, this might damage my back a little bit more. You hate to put that cloud of doubt in Mike Trout's brain because he always plays the game the right way. If there's a play to be made, he makes it. He has to steal second base, dive in head first, he does that. If he has to take a low inside fastball and turn on it and put all that torque on his back, he can do that, Kevin. And just to see the fact that there's question marks coming up. Now, Mike Trout's going to put on his best face and say, you know what? talked to a couple doctors here. I'm going to work through this. Don't worry about me. But everybody else around Mike Trout in that Los Angeles Angels organization, they're going to be worried about his back injury. And every day where he takes a hard hit or dives for a baseball, oh boy, did that tweak his back more than what he did in the past.
Mm-hmm. So the thing is, Mike Trout has been dealing with injury before this news came out. Obviously, this season, Mike Trout battling some injury, but it goes beyond that. And that's why I think this is so concerning. It's almost a wondering, are they kind of figuring out all the answers right now? In 2021, he only played 36 games. Now, 2020, 53, that's the shortened season. My thing is, did that help him play so many of the games? The last time he was, you know, in the 100 in terms of games played was 2019. He's at 79 games right now. I mean, Don, if I set it at 99.5, are you confidently betting over on the amount of games that Mike Trout will play this season? I'm certainly not.
No, not at all. Because if you're taking a look at Mike Trout, the point of him playing is what? Let's get him ready for the playoffs. You're not making the playoffs. So what are you actually doing here? Is this one of those where you say, all right, let's get some third and fourth opinions on your back. Can we get surgery now in the month of July where you will be ready by opening day next year? And what is best for your career as a whole? Is surgery the best thing or trying to hold off surgery because you think you can manage the pain and certainly not let it get any worse than what it is now? It's a tough situation to be in, but I know they'll do the right thing for Mike Trout in that organization because if they want to keep him in their plans, playing the rest of this year is pretty much obsolete at this point. It's can he play the next 5, 6, 7 years with the Los Angeles Angels?
Which is, again, the sad state of the LA Angels. You go through any sport, and if a top five player in that sport is all of a sudden injured, we go, uh-oh, how does this impact World Series title odds? Laughable if we brought up World Series title odds right now at the Los Angeles Angels. A waste of everybody's time. It's down the road. You know, Trout is only 30, and he's going to be under contract until 2030 with the LA Angels. So you're right. They need to think long-term here with Mike Trout because they already know, again, this is a lost season. Rendon shut down also again for the year. So it does beg the question, Donnie. Should this news push them to trade Shohei Ohtani within the next week?
I mean, they probably should explore all those outcomes, but if you're the Angels front office and you say to yourself, no matter what happens, we're always going to have a superstar with Mike Trout, who's obviously has a long-term deal with the Angels, and has shown no signs of saying, get me out of here and ship me off to a contender. Quite frankly, he re-signed with the Angels, which let us know that he really doesn't care if he's on a contender or not, and if the Angels win or not, it's really not that big of an issue. But let's just say Mike Trout is never the same baseball player, and something really goes wrong with his back, and he has to retire at 31. If you trade away Shohei Ohtani, you're a big market in Los Angeles. Where are your superstars at? People come out to the ballpark to see superstars, particularly in those markets. And if you have a team on the other side of town, like the Los Angeles Dodgers, that have millions of superstars out here and hundreds of millions of dollars to spend on more superstars, do you just secede and say, you know what, we can't compete with the Dodgers? You know, we're still in LA. We'll get our marketing money and, you know, just come out to the ballpark and enjoy a nice weather or nice weather in Los Angeles. But for me, if I'm looking to be serious, I need to make a move with Ohtani, and I need to rebuild that farm system because Rendon, Ohtani, Trout, superstars, it's not working for you. Rebuild this thing.
And I also think you have to kind of look at the landscape right now. You have roughly six or so teams that are willing to part ways with massive, massive trade packages to land Juan Soto. They, some of them, even if it's only three of them, value your guy more, you will get the haul that you're looking for. I know you and I disagree a little bit, but I understand the idea that Ohtani would be more valuable on the open trade market right now than Juan Soto is. It's a reasonable point by you. I think there are some teams that certainly would agree. Like, I really believe the Yankees are heavily in on Juan Soto. They're also in on Luis Castillo. The joke slash very real truth about Shohei Ohtani is the idea that he fits both boxes for at least the remainder of this season of an ace starting pitcher and a premier hitter that you put towards the top of your lineup. The Yankees might be able to give you anything you want. The Dodgers, the same exact thing. The New York Mets, the same exact thing. You don't want to miss that window if you're the Angels because Are you really going to pay Ohtani 10 years, $500 million to sit there and finish the season with 74 wins? Is that really what we're going to do here? I don't think so. So at some point, they're going to have to make that move. I thought it was noteworthy yesterday. The Dodgers did go up against Patrick Corbin and absolutely rocked his socks off. I mean, he didn't last an inning. I also, if you're the Nats, I think you just let him bleed out on the mound at that point there. Like, you're as bad as it is. You already beat them twice. Like, why make your bullpen have to go through all of that there? Like, let him at least finish out an inning. But, again, we joked about it yesterday. I genuinely believe, in a weird way, it helps the Nationals. They're never going to convince anybody that Patrick Corbin is a net positive there. He's a huge net negative, and they get to almost hang it over teams' heads, the Dodgers, the Yankees, and whomever else is, you know, the Cardinals, who are in this race for Soto. Look, if you don't want to take Patrick Corbin, that's fine. It's going to cost you an extra guy.
Yes, and you're seeing those reports coming out now because the general manager of the Nationals saying it's not necessarily, you know, imperative that we include Patrick Corbin to sort of erase that debt and take back two less prospects here. We can look at it both ways. So you're right, Corbin struggling yesterday. The Nats could say, well, you don't sweeten this pot up. You know, we're going to actually have to attach Patrick Corbin to this deal. No, don't do that. We'll give you Jason Dominguez here for the New York Yankees as opposed to taking on that contract there for Patrick Corbin. But it'll be interesting to see how it files out, because this is Patrick Corbin. He was one of the more sought-after free agents a couple years ago, heading over to the big three for the Nationals. Remember when the Nationals were actually successful and had a roster that, wow, they look really good 1-9, and also look at the pitching staff, Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, Patrick Corbin. How could you ever beat the Nationals? And they are a shell of those former rosters right now, looking to unload Juan Soto's and any other player that they can certainly get their hands on outside of their farm system. It's pretty crazy how things have worked in for the Nationals, but having one of those organizations that was the envy of Major League Baseball, go, man, look at the way they can do things. They can get rid of Bryce Harper, who wins the MVP in the National League because they don't want to pay him $300+ million and still win a World Series. And they said, you know what? We can one-up this. Let's just let Rendon go. Let's just let Max Scherzer go. Let's let Trey Turner go and see if he can still compete. Well, obviously, you can give it all your best baseball players. You are going to stink. So that business model didn't work out all that well for the Nationals. Of, oh, yeah, he's good, but we'll let him go.
Yeah, it's... They just won a World Series. Rendon is gone. Harper was never there for it. Scherzer's gone. Trey Turner's gone. I mean, Strasburg's never been the same since. It is incredible to think about what once was and what currently is. You look at yesterday's baseball board. I thought there were a lot of other things that could very much so catch your eye. J-Rod's first game back since the home run derby or since the All-Star game goes deep. Didn't break his swing. Phillies took a series off the Atlanta Braves. The A's sweeping the Astros. But for me, Luis Castillo, very likely his final start in a Cincinnati Reds uniform. 7 innings of work, only 3 earned runs, 1 walk to 8 strikeouts there. Now that ERA of clean under a 3. He definitely is, I think, the crown jewel of the pitching market coming into this trade deadline. So the Reds are really going to be able to get themselves a very nice haul. And I think a lot of the best teams in baseball will be calling Cincinnati on a regular basis, trying to see if they can bring this ace onto the fold there as these teams get set for the postseason run. We come up against the break, but when we come back, what are the Seattle Seahawks doing? What are the New England Patriots doing? A lot of questions. We'll see if we have the answer.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
All right, let's make a move to the NFL. There's a couple of interesting stories that certainly caught my attention yesterday. The first is the Geno Smith starting with the ones exclusively situation that we have going on right now in Seattle. What are we doing in Seattle? Does Pete Carroll think that he and Geno Smith are going to rip off 9-8, sneak into the postseason, keep his job? Are they really up in the front office just letting Pete Carroll walked the plane. Ah, Pete, you like Geno? Ah, go ahead, man. All you. Whatever you like there. No worries about it. What is the plan for this football team?
Well, you didn't like last year Geno Smith filling in for 700 yards passing, 5 touchdowns, and 1 interception. If he can just turn that into a full season, he might be the NFL MVP. But I always get a kick out of this stuff, too, because we've, you know, sometimes we don't have to be in the building. We told you all along, Jimmy Garoppolo, we know what's going to happen, even though these NFL GMs are telling you something different. When everybody said, all right, Seattle, and Pete Carroll kept telling us this, Kevin, but man, I'm really happy with my quarterback room. Well, there's a Yahoo Sports story that came out, and we do love sources because a lot of people don't want to put their name on record for fear of, hey, why would you say something like that? But the headline reads, Drew Lock, Geno Smith get brutal rankings from NFL coaches and executives, right? Because we're all on the same page here. Yeah. Hey, Seattle, what are you doing here? I don't know. You went from one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL to the worst quarterback situation. But for some reason, your front office, including your head coach, Kevin, are telling us, yeah, no. What are you guys talking about? Oh, this quarterback room is amazing here. So now Geno Smith is getting all the ones. Now, typically, we hate the game of Kevin, right, where we say to ourselves, this is going to be a quarterback battle. But my goodness, if there's 32 teams in the NFL and where there actually probably should be at least a 50-50 split quarterback battle, it's in Seattle because both of those guys stink. And they will have an equal opportunity to stink at practice to show Pete Carroll that they're not good enough to be NFL quarterbacks, at least starting NFL quarterbacks at this point. But we're still led to believe, you know what, after this, I'm going to go watch some, you know, highlights from Seattle and after their practices to see Pete Carroll take the podium and go, you know what? I've never seen better quarterback play since I've been a head coach. I'm actually expecting him to say that shortly over the next couple days.
Here is the thing with Geno. The best game I can throw people, that Saints game, right? 13-10, Saints are solid. His first pass of the game, 5 minutes into the game, an 84-yard touchdown to DK Metcalf. All he did was put the ball in Metcalf's hand and he went the other way. Now, Donnie, you are 5 minutes into the game. You have got 84 yards on the arm. You've got a touchdown on the board. We're cooking. We're rolling. We're running. He proceeded the rest of the way to throw for 83 yards. He threw for less yards the rest of the game than he did on that first pass of the game. No touchdowns. No touchdowns to be seen. He had 11 completions on 21 attempts for 83 yards. He crossed 200 passing once with a whopping 209 in a game that went to overtime. So I don't even know if that counts. Geno Smith is in no way, shape, or form at the age of 31 on what feels like Team 6 going to be the guy in Seattle. You at least have a young quarterback who has not been given a world of chances in Denver. Just see how it goes. Why not? You're not going to run Geno out there and then be able to drum up trade interest. Maybe you could do that on Drew Lock, though. Maybe. Probably not. But definitely not with Geno Smith.
You know what's interesting about the point you just brought up there? You look at Geno Smith and you say to yourself, man, that guy's got to be pushing like Aaron Rodgers' age, Tom Brady age at 41. It seems like he's been around for like 20 years in the NFL, but he is only 31 years old. So there is something to say like, hey, he's just entering into the prime of his NFL career quarterback. But I don't know what Pete Carroll likes about him. Does he chew gum with Pete Carroll and they chomp it in the quarterback? I mean, oh man, this guy really gets it here. Or, ooh, Geno Smith walks in the room. Ooh. That's a sharp pair of Air Monarchs right there, Gino. Boy, I like those. We're going to get a pair and wear them on the sidelines like he does each and every week. I don't know what's going on in Seattle. It's sort of one of the things that we equate to like a Ponzi scheme. There has to be something where somebody knows something that we don't know in Seattle. Why you would say after all the options in the offseason, you repeatedly told us, if nothing else changes in our quarterback room, we love it. It's a fantastic quarterback room. I'm actually impressed at the charade that's been going on in Seattle for so long, and I would like to see it play out at this point now. Don't make any moves. Tell us Geno Smith and Drew Lock are it and show me in the regular season.
Yeah, again, it's one of those situations where if you're tanking, you go Drew Lock. And if you're looking to win, well, then you're just waiting in the wind. Then you sign Garoppolo, right? But they're just going to run Geno Smith out there and then run the ball 70 times a game, and it's not. All right, I guess. Should DK Metcalf just be looking for a trade too? Like, why does he want a 5-year, 4-year extension, whatever it might be, from the Seattle Seahawks? Maybe the thought process is it'll be a kind of 1-year quick wheel spin, but I have my question marks. Now, that's confusing, what they're doing in Seattle to me. Pales in comparison to New England. Listen, Brady versus Bill is largely irrelevant. They were together, and it worked phenomenally. The dynasty that this sport, the NFL, has offered up, football has offered up. I got you. But there can't be anybody that still thinks it's Bill over Tom, right? Like, there can't be anybody that thinks that. Brady rocked up, won a Super Bowl. He still basically is the master of signing free agents. Belichick, on the other hand, had a game where he let his quarterback throw the ball 3 times. We knew that that was a bad omen here on this show. Nobody else did. Everybody else thought it was a great thing. Bad omen. And now he's gone so far, he doesn't have an offensive coordinator, but he sneaky does. It's his former defensive coordinator that was a horrific head coach in Detroit. Matt Patricia calling plays in New England. I ask once again, what are we doing here?
Now, I like to start this conversation off because Bill Belichick usually will like to tell you, I'm the smartest man in the room, and you don't have to answer any questions because you win Super Bowls. Life without the single best football player in the history of the sport is a little bit tougher than it seems, right? I can win without it, and he shows you. Do you remember all of those years? And we can almost equate this to Green Bay, even though they only have one Super Bowl. But they have Aaron Rodgers. And the Green Bay front office, they tell you, boy, they don't spend any money in free agency, man. They are so smart. That's the way you build championship teams. No, the way you build championship teams is getting one of the best quarterbacks of all time, and then you can play a front as an organization, say, no, the way to win championships is not through free agency. It's through the best football player we've ever seen play. So what happens, mind you, Kevin, once Tom Brady does leave? They open the purse strings and spend like $200 million on free agents, and it doesn't work. And I sort of laugh because, oh, I thought, Bill, you build through the draft and it's the Patriot way. But all of a sudden, when the best football player in the world leaves your team, you have to overcompensate. Now, also, let's take a look at Bill Belichick from what he said heading into camp. Hey, Bill, who's your offensive defensive coordinators? We're not big on titles around here, he says. Oh, you're not big on titles. So, Bill, why did you have an offensive and defensive coordinator for 25 years in New England, but now all of a sudden you're not big on titles? Well, I'm not going to answer that question. No, I answer it for you here. It's because if you rock up to that mic, as my man K-Dub likes to say, and they say, who is your offensive coordinator? And you say, Matt Patricia, they are going to flood that room with questions like, Bill, have you lost your mind? Do you have to take a competency test at this point now? What is going on? Are you panicking, Bill? Do you have any idea what you're doing since Tom Brady left? Do you understand that you have a failed defensive coordinator / head coach as your offensive coordinator? And you know what else he can't say is, well, no, my offensive coordinator really is Joe Judge. Oh, the guy down that coached the Giants, it was a complete embarrassment. Is that why all of a sudden we look at this, Kevin, and say, we don't want any titles because no matter who I pick, I'm going to get crushed by the media? Yeah, that's more of an answer for me, Bill.
And again, like you run through the – like maybe the reason all the coaches that leave aren't as good is because maybe the lessons they're learning aren't as good. I mean, like, I don't know. Maybe that makes some sense. This is the other thing as well. This is not a New England Patriots team that is coming off some unbelievably fantastic season. Rookie quarterback went to the playoffs. I got you. They had a 7-game win streak. They beat up on a lot of bad football teams. They did have that win against the Bills in the conditions, which was insane. The Bills existed almost entirely the whole game inside New England territory. They just couldn't cross the finish line there. And they did have a win against the Titans, but that's kind of when they were in the free fall. But they largely punished bad teams. They were 10-7. They had a 7-game win streak. So outside of that, they were 3-7. But it is what it is. But Donnie, like, do people forget how the season ended for them? 47-17 in Buffalo. Josh Allen played a legitimately perfect football game from a passer rating perspective. That 157.6, the QBR was a 98.5. They were dominant. And Mac Jones was not good. 24 of 38, 232 yards. He averaged half yards per attempt to what Josh Allen averaged. 2 interceptions in the game for Mac Jones. I mean, they were embarrassed thoroughly. And they're running it back with again, where have they really gone out there and gotten better, at least from the offensive perspective? Like, we're hearing all these great things out of Mac Jones. I got to tell you, I find it a little odd that I don't have Mac Jones props on the FanDuel Sportsbook. I'd like to believe that in the room, Donnie, like, they have question marks about, I don't know where this guy's going to land. I don't know who's going to win quarterback jobs here. And they go, yeah, I'm not posting a Mac Jones prop until I see what Matt Patricia's play calling looks like. Like, I'd like to believe that that's what's going on there right now, because how could you not have questions around this? There's no way I am going to give you a full vote of confidence on the notion of Matt Patricia running the show on the offensive side of the football in New England, because we were all super high on Josh McDaniels, and he's gone. That has to matter somewhere along the line.
No, it does matter. And I actually think they're more equipped this year to have a better season on offense. Obviously, your quarterback has another year under his belt. You do have a pretty good offensive line. You added Devontae Parker at wide receiver. So I do see the reason where you can have some upside. But I do, you know, just get back to last year on its head. You drafted a quarterback in the first round, supposed to be your franchise guy. And I couldn't figure it out. And we were watching that game together on In Play Sports tonight and saying, this is the stupidest game. Actually, he's a genius. Now, I said, let's peel back the onion here. He's basically getting his quarterback in a meeting and go, you know what? You're not good enough. You're just not good enough. You can't throw the football. We're heading to Buffalo. We have to do some crazy game script just to try to freak out that Buffalo team, where we're going to run the clock. We're going to run it down. We're not going to throw the football. Maybe they make a mistake. And it was ultra windy conditions there, so Buffalo couldn't capitalize or cash in. But many people stepped away from that game and said, that's the Bill Belichick that we know. He's a genius. We looked at it saying, that's the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. And I'm fading the New England Patriots. Oh, Donnie, you're so stupid. You're fading the Patriots? That was one of the best games I ever watched. Yeah, you let your quarterback throw three times. Let's see how much confidence you have down the stretch. And it went exactly the way we thought it would. But now you're stepping into a new year. You hear Bill Belichick say, hey, you know what? Mac Jones really, you know, slimmed down in the offseason. He looks great. He's throwing passes. Rightfully so. But there's way more question marks with the New England Patriots now than we've ever seen in the past. And we'll see if they can turn it around, because game one, they're going to have a tough one right off the bat, and they're not even favored in that game.
And I want to talk about that game. I don't want to have to rush, but you can see the odds. We might hit it on the other side of it. The Miami Dolphins host the New England Patriots.
Such a good one.
Week number one. I am not sure there is a game that we will look to get more answers out of than Miami-New England game one. Because the loser, it'll be like, all right, forget them. They are not real. And the winner of the game, you start to think about the different kind of approaches that you can make then, maybe challenging a Buffalo, things of that nature. Let's hit a break. We'll come right back here and close out hour number.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
To close it out here with that Dolphins, you go through, there's a couple of spots where you have some very, very narrow lines, right? But Browns, Panthers, a bit of an anomaly. You've got a road favorite number on Tampa Bay, in Dallas, in Green Bay, and Minnesota. But when you look at a team favored in a home game, this is really a tight, tight number here for the Dolphins up against the New England Patriots. And there's so many changes in Miami. Tyreek Hill, obviously Tua's not a change, but another year of Tua. Brand new head coach. There's a lot of expectations for that Dolphins team. They have a chance to set the tempo. And I'm not going to tell you that everybody's going to say sky is falling if New England loses, but I might. I really want to see what those two teams bring to the table. Like, it's one of those games, DRS, where I know I'm going to be trying to find the props market more so because of the scary nature of that side.
Yes, it looks like you can get a nice middle, too, on that total here. But if you take a look at the teams, the way it lines up, see that? I mean, I'm a handicapper. Like, I go for that stuff. I'll get after that. If we look at the wide receiver position here for the Dolphins, Hill, Wilson, and Waddle. You want to talk about speed across the board. Mike Gesicki at tight end, very good. The reason I'm bringing this up here, Kevin, is if we try to break down this game and just look at it on the pieces of the entire season, doesn't it feel to you like a referendum game right off the bat for Tua Tagovailoa? Not even Mac Jones. Like, if Tua Tagovailoa loses this game at home to a decent Patriots team, I think there's going to be a lot of backlash. And he's not our guy, Kevin. I told you he wasn't our guy. We got to start looking for another quarterback already. But if he wins this game, he gets that momentum over the Patriots, Patriots, this could be a springboard for the Dolphins. Look, the Patriots will be the Patriots in the Patriot way. I understand that. But if I'm looking from a season-long perspective, the Dolphins win opening day and Tua plays well. Tyreek Hill gets off. Waddle has his yardage. I think this could be a real game that the Dolphins use and say, we're here to stay and maybe challenge the Buffalo Bills in the East. But I got to tell you, Tua needs this game more than Mac.
I agree, 100%. If Tua goes out there, two picks, struggles the whole way, they finish with like 14 points, it's going to get ugly. It's definitely going to get ugly. But they light New England up. That's going to also be very interesting. We'll talk a little NBA headlines to start hour number two.